Longtime Yankee player and manager Yogi Berra once said, "The future ain't what it used to be." Now, you can ponder that one for a moment. And yet, strangely, I think I know exactly what Yogi meant by these words. You see, we have dreams and we have plans for what the future will be, but sometimes it just doesn't become exactly what we planned. Our future, when it arrives, it ain't what it used to be in our dreams. 7 days ago, our calendar rolled to 2018. If you're old like me, can you believe that? Seems like just yesterday it was Y2K. For you guys under age 18, that was year 2000. Can you believe it's been 18 years since then when the world was going to come to an end? And it didn't. You know, think about the first 18 years of your life. You talk about crawling along. Did it take forever for you to get to be 18? It didn't take forever for me to get from then to today, though. I promise you that. The future may not be what it used to be, but one thing about the future, it keeps coming. Time marches on relentlessly. It does so at a very steady pace, 1 hour for every time that hand goes around that clock. But for some of us today, we aren't living in 2018. For some of us in this room are stuck somewhere in the past. See, something happened along the way in the path of your life to your future today, and you got stuck, and you just can't move on. See, for some reason, 2018 is not exactly what you hoped it would be. Somewhere along the way, something went wrong. Life didn't happen as you planned it. Maybe you made some bad choices, bad decisions. Sometimes things just happen. And so you're stuck. And you keep looking back, wanting to change what went wrong, but you realize that it's not working. The more you seek to change it, the more you focus on it, nothing happens. You want to be optimistic about 2018, but it's just not happening because it's not the future that you planned it to be. And this morning, we're going to examine the life of a young man who could have very easily gotten stuck somewhere along the way. You talk about a guy with an unexpected and uncertain future. Joseph was a man who had just such a future. Few of us will ever live a tougher stretch of years than Joseph did. For about 15 years of his life was a train wreck. Now, yeah, he bore a little bit of the blame, but he didn't deserve what he got. Joseph very easily could have said somewhere along the way, "The future ain't what it used to be," because his life in no way turned out as he had imagined it. This morning, I want us to see how to deal with an unexpected future. I want us to see how Joseph dealt with change and frustration and disappointment. How does a person avoid getting stuck somewhere in the past? Well, let's begin reading in Genesis chapter 41, verse 46. There it says, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. Now the seven plentiful years the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. And Joseph gathered very much grain as the sands of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all of my toil and all of my father's house. And he named the second he called, and the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. How many of you were named by your parents something really special. Something that when people hear your name, they know immediately who you are named for or what your name means. I've always been impressed with people who can come up with those kind of names, parents who think through those kind of things and just come up with incredibly meaningful names for their children. Each name, it's almost like each name, each letter means something special. Now, I want you to understand something. Don and I put a lot of thought into naming our kids, but ultimately, we just sort of picked out names we liked. Our children's names, they mean a great deal to us, but if you heard them, you would probably not think they convey anything special. But the names are meaningful to us. Our youngest child, for instance, was born on a family vacation down in St. Simon's Island. It was one of the ones like we're doing this year. Donna was about 8.5 months pregnant when we decided to go. But this was our fourth child, and well, we were pretty relaxed about things, and so we didn't. I mean, she hadn't gone into labor early before. Why would she go into labor early now? And I don't think she would have had she not gone body surfing the whole last day we were there. I think it had something to do with the waves beating on her belly. Well, the last night, in the middle of the night, I hear this gasp. She's in labor. Now, we had a doctor with us. There was a missionary doctor who was with us, and we didn't have any health insurance at the time. So immediately my wife thinks, yeah, this is perfect. Go get Wesley, and he can deliver the baby right here. Wesley didn't go along with our idea, so we went to the local hospital there in Brunswick, and a few hours later, we had the arrival of little Jamie. Now, we weren't really prepared for having a baby. We didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl, and we certainly hadn't decided on a name. Now, we thought, hey, we got about a six-hour drive going home. We'll figure out a name on the way home. But did you know that hospitals will not let you leave without putting a name on the birth certificate? And we were up against the clock because, like I said, we didn't have any health insurance, and so we had to be out of there before we hit the 24-hour mark. Because once you hit 24-hour mark, you got to pay for the next day. So, man, we were determined 23 hours and a half. We're out of here. Well, finally we decided in the very last hour, we would name her after her dad. And so her first name is Jamie, named after me. Fortunately for Jamie, we didn't name her middle name after me, which is Albert. I was named after my two grandfathers, James and Albert. And I was named at a time when Bill Cosby decided to come up with a fictional character named Fat Albert. Now, you know how it is in school, how you never, ever tell somebody your middle name? You got one of those? You don't tell anybody? Well, don't you hate it on the first day of school when the teachers are going down the roster and they really don't know what to call you, so they read your whole name? James Albert Chapman, are you here? And, of course, I'm ducking. And then for the rest of the year, you hit, hey, Fat Albert coming for you, you know. It was terrible. It was just terrible. So needless to say, we didn't name her Jamie Albert or anything close. Well, in our text today, Joseph has two sons. He doesn't have them on vacation, but he does have them on an unplanned hiatus in Egypt. And their names are well thought out, and they had incredible meaning to their dad. See, their names literally told the story of his life to that point. Joseph names his children after two incredible things that God had done in his life. Now, let me first very briefly recount the story of Joseph's life. You know it. You remember he was the 11th of 12 boys born in a family. And being the son of Rachel, Jacob's favorite wife, he became sort of a favorite to his father, and his brothers knew it. Now, if you have young children at home, let me just tell you that showing favoritism at home is a very, very dangerous game. It can lead to some unhealthy sibling relationships, and it certainly did in Jacob's household. Jealousy and bitterness are always the fruits that grow out of favoritism. And so the 10 older brothers quickly began to pick on Joseph. And over time, their hatred turned into abuse. Finally, they fake Joseph's death and they sell him into slavery into Egypt. He goes there, He spends time in Potiphar's house where he's then accused of rape, falsely accused of raping Potiphar's wife. He's thrown into prison. There he's forgotten by his friends in prison. Joseph lives out 15 years of frustration, of disappointment, of heartache. And maybe today, to some degree, you can relate to that. Maybe you've gone through some tough years that have brought you to the point to where the future that you're living is not the future that you envisioned. Of course, in Joseph's life, thankfully, Pharaoh had some dreams, and Joseph interprets them, and of course, the rest is history. 7 years of abundance in the land, followed by 7 years of famine, and Joseph finds himself second in the nation only to Pharaoh himself. And it's during these 7 years of abundance that he marries an Egyptian woman and has two sons. The first one he names Manasseh, which literally means causes to forget. See, Joseph had a difficult life. It was a combination of pain and loss and hurt, but somehow he had learned how to let go of those memories. He had learned to forgive and forget and to move on. And let me say to you, this is a very difficult thing to do after you've gone through a painful episode of life. I don't know that we ever truly forget the pain in our lives, the painful years. And yet somehow Joseph learned how to do it. I think one of the real keys to learning how to forget the past is being willing to embrace the new that God brings our way, even if the new that God brings is not the new that we planned for. Do you understand? Because a lot of times, see, we plan it out, and we know what's coming next, and then all of a sudden something happens, and what comes next is not what we thought. But if we're willing to embrace it, God can work good. For so many people, their attitude through life is, if it's not what I want, if it's not the way I planned it, then I'm not going to be happy with it. Ever thought that way? Something ever happened and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but you go, well, this wasn't what I wanted. This wasn't what I planned for. This wasn't the way it was supposed to happen, and therefore, I'm just not going to be happy about it. I see people do that all the time. But we miss out on so much good that God wants to bring to our life because we simply refuse to accept what God brings next. My observations through the years of doing a lot of counseling is that bitter people never forget anything. They hold on to grudges like a vice grip. They hold on to pain and hurt like they're never going to let go of it. In counseling, I've heard people recount hurts that happened 30 years ago, and you'd think it happened yesterday. I'll never forget years ago, I was counseling with a middle-aged man who literally started trembling when he was talking about his mother and how she had verbally and physically abused him. I mean, he was trembling, and he got so angry that I got worried. I mean, I started to get a little scared. I mean, his anger, his face was red. And so as I was asking about his mom, he went on to say, she died 20 years ago. She'd been dead 20 years, and he's still telling this story like it had happened yesterday. C.S. Lewis wrote, "Hell will be a place where you remember every misdeed that has happened to you." It is hell on earth to remember every misdeed that's done to you. Every painful thing that's ever happened that you just keep up there and you just regurgitate it over and over and over again. See, guys, I got a real blessing. I have the blessing of a short memory. I really do. Sometimes it's a blessing, sometimes it's a curse. When I forget your name on Sunday morning, you can just remember, I've got a short memory. But I have the ability to let go of things that happened in the past. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I totally forget about them, but I just sort of am able to just put them out of my mind. But many people can't let go of anything, especially the difficult things that they've gone through. And they spend a good portion of their life living in that past. Many of you, most of you, have probably seen the movie The Bourne Identity. It's the story of a trained assassin who has developed amnesia after being nearly killed in the line of duty. And he has forgotten his past. And the whole plot of the movie centers around his attempt to remember who he is and to remember his past. Most of us have just the opposite problem. We can't forget. We can't let go of it. We refuse to let go of things. And so often we live in the present thinking about the past. The calendar moves on, but we don't. You know, your calendar recently just turned over to 2018, but somehow you're still stuck in 2017. Or maybe you're stuck in 2007, or maybe 1997, or if you're old enough, 1977. We're stuck there because something happened in that particular year that really hurt us. Maybe that was the year that Dad walked out on you and Mom and your parents got that divorce. Or maybe it was the year that you had that really terrible car accident that has caused so much pain through the years. Or maybe it was the year that you lost a child or you lost a spouse. Or maybe it was the year that you got betrayed by your best friend, someone that you thought would never let you down, but they did. Or maybe it was the year that you got passed over for that promotion that was yours and you should have had it, but somebody else got it instead and you've never stopped thinking about the unfairness of that situation. Or maybe it was the year that you were abused and there was no one there to rescue you. And nobody really understands what you've gone through. But you keep chasing it. And you keep thinking that somehow if you could just catch up to it and if you could change it, everything would be okay, but you can't. You can't. Don't you know that there were days when Joseph sat in that prison and thought about his family and thought about his home in Israel? And don't you know he dreamed about what life might have been like had Dad not given him that silly coat of many colors? I'm sure he did. Guys, sometimes we dehumanize characters in the Bible. But he was no different from you. Put yourself in that situation. Put yourself having been treated unjustly and now finding yourself in a dank, dark, dank prison with nothing to do but think. You don't tell me you would have relived that episode over and over again thinking how it could have been different. But somehow along the way, God had helped Joseph forget. Now, the name implies it literally made him forget. Now, I think that God very rarely makes us do anything, but God did enable him to forget. God did somehow enable him to let go of the hurt. And guys, God can do the same thing for you. God can enable you, if you want to let go of those things that you've been holding on to. Joseph forgot two things, it tells us here in the passage. First, he forgot his toil, literally his pain. God allowed him to forget the things in life that had been so hurtful and so painful. Maybe the betrayal of his brothers. Maybe the years in slavery and in imprisonment. Maybe the hurt that his friends had inflicted upon him when they had totally forgotten about him. But somehow, God had enabled him to let go of it and leave it behind. Also, God had interestingly enabled him to forget his family. Now, what did his family represent? It represented things that he had lost, because he had lost his family, things that had been taken away from him. Had something been taken away from you, and you really have been upset about it? You really don't think it was fair? And yet it happened. Guys, God can help you even forget those things. What was the secret to Joseph's forgetfulness, if you will? Let me give you three things that I think really helped Joseph forget the past. Number one is he stopped looking back. Joseph stopped chasing after things that he knew he couldn't change. You know, it's interesting. We have more in the book of Genesis about Joseph than any other person in there. And nowhere in the narrative do we see Joseph seeking or trying to go back to his father's house in Israel. Even when he had the position and the resources to do so, he didn't try to. I find that very fascinating. They finally came to him. And at that point, he's able to deal with his brothers out of love and forgiveness. Why? Because he hadn't been fixated on his hurt in the past. He hasn't built up bitterness in his life. So when they do show up, he's able to love them. He's able to show forgiveness to them. Guys, the fruit of looking backwards is always bitterness. If that's where your focus is, I can tell you the fruit that's going to come out of your life is hurt and bitterness. That's what it breeds. He stopped looking back. But second, he stopped having pity parties. Man, if there's anybody that deserved to have a pity party, it was Joseph. Joseph was human. Now, I don't think we should even pretend today that there weren't moments that Joseph didn't sit somewhere and think, why me? What did I do? How did I get here? I'm sure that he had moments where he shed a few tears and felt sorry for himself. But it's interesting. He apparently didn't stay there long enough that the Holy Spirit saw fit to record it in the Scripture. So it obviously wasn't something that was a big part of his life. But some people live lives that are one big party, one big pity party. And life's all about them and it's all about their hurt. I'll never forget. When I was 12 years old, the advice that my mom gave me one day when I was having a particularly good pity party. See, I had an older brother. Any of you guys have older brothers? Let me tell you about my older brother. Good-looking guy. Always been a good-looking guy. Great personality. He's the kind of guy that walked into a room and he just knew everybody. He just talked to everybody. Everybody knew him. He was kind of, he's just a guy that loved, but I don't want to say he loved the spotlight, but he lived in the spotlight. He was just one of those people, very charismatic. And then there was me. And I've told you a little bit about me as a kid. I was incredibly shy. The last place I wanted to be was in the spotlight. I was just a little chubby, freckle-faced kid, and I didn't want to have nothing to do. But you know what? My brother didn't particularly like hanging out with me. I was sort of the third wheel whenever I was there, and he was like, why are you here? And I'm sure I was a pest to him. And for that reason, a lot of times he was going out having fun with his friends, and I was sitting there alone feeling sorry for myself. So one particular night, I'm sitting on the front stairs, and I'm just, and I'm pouting, and I'm boo-hooing. And my mom walks out, and you had to know my mom. You talk about a person with wisdom and horse sense. Now, she wasn't the most educated person in the world. I mean, she got her high school diploma, but that's about as far as she went. She wasn't book smart, but boy, did she have wisdom. And she plopped down next to me, and I will never, ever forget what she said to me. She sat there, and she said, James, you can sit here and feel sorry for yourself, or you can enjoy life, but you cannot do both. And I held on to that. And I got up from there that night. For some reason, it just hit me, and I thought, I am not, and this, I'm a kid, and I thought, I am not going to live life like this. And some of you today need to realize that you can sit here and feel sorry for yourself, or you can enjoy life, but you cannot do both. Are you ready to stop? And then third, Joseph had embraced the new path God had placed him on. Joseph woke up one day, and he's in a different city, and he's in a different place, not where he wanted to be, not what he thought his future would be. But you know what he immediately did? He began to work hard and to live responsibly everywhere he was. He just embraced it. He later embraced the job offer that Pharaoh gave him. He embraced an Egyptian wife. It became his home. Egypt became his home. He just embraced where God put him. You know, Paul had a similar experience to Joseph. You know, Paul and Joseph have one thing in common. They were both hurt by the people they most wanted to love. Paul had a future that I don't think was what he planned it to be. You know, I think about on that road to Damascus when that light shone down on him and Jesus touched him and changed his heart. I am sure that after Paul regained his sight, he probably thought, wow, this is going to be great. This is going to be so good. Now, the prophet came to him and I said, hey, it's going to be tough, Paul. Life is not going to be easy. But hey, Jesus had just changed his life. I'm thinking, man, this is good. And so Paul had in his mind what his future was going to look like. He had it all envisioned. But then we read in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, as Paul reminisces over his what is now his painful past, he says, from the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and day I've been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the cities, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea. I gotta take a breath. In perils among the false brethren. You talk about it. You describe your life as in perils all the time? That ain't good. In weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, which I guess he didn't want to write down, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. And you think you got problems? You think you got a reason to have a pity party? And yet, did Paul have a pity party? It's interesting, we later read in Philippians chapter 3, Paul writes these words, brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press towards the goal of the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Look at what we see Paul doing. Forgetting those things that are behind. God did the same thing for Paul that he'd done for Joseph. He gave him the ability to forget. And Paul lived his life reaching forward, pressing onward. His eyes were constantly looking ahead. Listen, angry, bitter people are always looking back. They never look forward. Which direction are you looking today? When your calendar rolled over to 2018, which direction were you looking? Did you wake up on New Year's Day excited, thinking, wow, wonder what's going to happen this year? Wonder what God's going to do this year? When you came up for the week of prayer, were you thinking, Lord, man, it's a bright future. This is going to be good. Or were you thinking, man, 2017 stunk. I hated that year. And you've just been living it. And you haven't let yourself move on. But notice the order here. Notice the order. It's the same for both. That you first had to forget what lies behind in order to press forward. Joseph had a second son. His name was Ephraim. Ephraim means doubly fruitful. See, first God helped Joseph forget his past, forgive those who'd harmed him, and move on. And then God gave to him a blessing, a second son that he named doubly fruitful. Joseph realized that his life in Egypt could be way more than he anticipated. His life in Egypt could actually be far more effective and powerful than it could have ever been back in Israel. Yes, I'm thinking about it. If he were second in command in Israel versus being second in command in Egypt, you know what I mean? Life got doubly blessed. God made him far more fruitful in Egypt than he ever could have been in Israel. But notice again the order. Manasseh, forgetting the past. Ephraim, being doubly blessed, doubly fruitful. But I want you to notice something important, very important. Notice where his fruitfulness happened. In the land of his affliction. Now, let's be real. Most of us, the only thing we want out of the land of affliction is out of the land of affliction. We don't want to live there. That's where the pain is. That's where the hurt is. That's where it's no fun. That's not the future that we planned on. And yet, Joseph found his fruitfulness there. Remember the Jewish people? After they had committed idolatry for year after year, for hundreds of years, God finally judged them. He brings Nebuchadnezzar down. They ransack the city of Jerusalem. It's totally destroyed. He takes the exiles there to Babylon. And the false prophets followed them to Babylon, and they kept telling the people, hey, don't get too comfortable. You're not going to be here long. This is a bad place. I know, land of affliction, Babylon. Nobody wants to be here. It's not going to be long. Jeremiah, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, writes him a letter and says, no, it's going to be a while. You're going to be here in this land of affliction for 70 years. And God tells him something interesting in the letter that Jeremiah writes in chapter 29, verse 5 and 6. There, God instructs the people in their land of affliction, build houses and dwell in them. Plant gardens and eat their fruit. Take wives and begot sons and daughters. And take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands so that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased there and not diminished. God instructs these Jewish people who are in exile in their land of affliction to do three things. He tells them first, guys, build houses. Now, if they were only going to be there for a couple of years, you know what he told them to do? Hey, move into an apartment. Rent a home. But don't buy one. Don't build one. Guys, we build homes what? When we're planning on putting down roots, we realize we're going to be here for a while. And God is trying to send a message to them. He's saying, right where you are, in this land that you don't want to be in, here's the deal. I can bless you if you'll first build a house. Plant some roots. Second, he tells them to begin to plant fruit, food. He says, plant gardens. In other words, begin to sow good seeds right where you are. Our application today would be to begin to sow some seeds of forgiveness, some seeds of compassion right where you are. Cast out some seeds of kindness. You know, we're usually not very kind to the people in the land of affliction. We're usually pretty grumpy. We're usually in a bad mood. We get up on the wrong side of the bed a lot in the land of affliction. And yet God says to plant some seeds because the harvest is going to energize us and nourish us. It's going to put us back on the path of life you want to be in. In other words, your situation will not improve until you plant for a better future, God is telling them. Third, he tells them to marry and to multiply. Now, my application here is not necessarily that we literally go out and marry and have children, though that is exactly what God told them to do. Why? Again, sending the message, you're going to be here for a while, make the best of it. But guys, I think some of us, when we find ourselves in the land of affliction, we need to realize that we too need to multiply in the sense of reaching out to others. Why? Because when we're in a painful place, where do we turn? Inward. It becomes all about me and my hurt and my pain. And yet God tells these people, hey, I know you're hurting. I know you're not where you want to be, but here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn outward. I want you to multiply. I want you to marry and have children. In times of affliction, we don't usually want to find joy. We don't want to move on, but that is exactly what God tells them to do. God wanted to use the land of affliction that Joseph was in to strengthen him, to mold him, to build up his character, to toughen him, to build his faith. What if Joseph had only been interested in changing his circumstances? What if the whole time he was in Egypt, he kept thinking, I got to get back. I got to go home. I want to go back there. I want to go back to Israel. I want to go back to my dad's house. I liked it better in my dad's house, which probably wasn't true, by the way. But we forget what life was like, you know, in the past. See, when it comes to life's challenges, Are you a fight or a flight person? Do you fight through your problems or do you run from your problems? One sign that we tend towards flight over fight is that we're really good at blaming other people for our problems. If you're a blamer, that's a pretty good sign that all you're trying to do is run away from your problems. Guys, when you embrace your problems, when you realize that, okay, I'm here, part of it's my fault, maybe it's not, but you know what? This is where I'm at, and I'm going to embrace it. When you begin to do that, you know what you stop doing? You stop blaming other people. You stop looking around, pointing fault. As a matter of fact, you're not even interested in fault anymore. You're interested in fixing things. You're interested in moving forward. But we don't like Egypt, do we? See, we don't like being in a place where there are problems, but it's the place that God is using to change us, to change us. What's the implication? That I'm the problem that needs to be fixed here, according to God. Have you come to that realization yet? You know, I've quoted this before, but one of my favorite AA sayings is, if I am not the problem, there is no solution. God, that's so important. It's so important that we realize that the only person in life I can fix is me. And so if I'll stop looking around at everybody else and blaming them, and I just look in the mirror and go, okay, James, let's start here. Let's fix this. Then I can become the person that God wants me to be. Joseph's fruitfulness happened because he embraced his Egypt. He let go of his pain and he moved on. And because he moved on, God was able to bless him right where he was. Joseph accepted that life, that his future was not going to be the future that he planned on. And so what did he do? He accepted what came his way. He married an Egyptian wife. He made a home there. He embraced the job that God gave him there. He embraced the role. He embraced God's plan for him, even though it wasn't the plan that he had made for himself. And let me say to you, when you get stuck and you begin to hold on to a painful past, when you do that, you do not allow yourself to embrace the new path that God has for us. And what is the result of that? We prevent God from being able to be fruitful in our lives. That double fruitfulness that God often has planned for us. Guys, what about you? As the calendar continues to turn, which direction are you facing? Are you looking ahead at 2018 and you're saying, okay, Lord, not exactly what I was planning on, but okay, I'm with you. Or are you still facing in the other direction, looking back in anger and in bitterness at last year and what went wrong, and you're frustrated and you're miserable and you're making the people around you miserable as well? Hey, let me encourage you this morning. Look ahead. Start afresh. Build a house. Plant some seeds. Reach out. Get outside of yourself. Stop chasing the past that you cannot change and embrace the life that God has for you this year.